The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now I'm joined in the studio by Irish astronaut Dr. Nora Patton. You're very welcome.
Good morning. Yeah, lovely to be here.
Lovely to see you. How are you?
Great. Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking it's just over 2 years since the space flight was announced. And it's hard to believe it's 2 years, but we've equally crammed an awful lot into that time.
And so do you have a date yet?
So I suppose we have a timeline. So we're going to be flying on a commercial suborbital space flight with Virgin Galactic. And they're at the moment building their next generation spacecraft, which is called Delta. And that's what we'll fly on. So when our flight was announced in 2024, we had said our flight is anticipated to take place within the first 12 months of Delta being operational. So all going well, we'll hopefully fly in 2027.
Okay, so you'll have this year to prep for it, as you have had the last couple of years.
Correct.
And then once we hit December time, you'll be looking at I'm going in the next couple of months, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah, that's the plan. I mean, for us, it's been a really full on 2 years of prepping ourselves, prepping the research, really solidifying the research partnerships and all of those kind of aspects. So we've done multiple microgravity flights over in Canada. That's the flights where you get to float yourselves and your research in weightlessness for this 20-second period of time, can do it repeatedly on one flight.
Mm-hmm.
That gives us the ideal opportunity to test the research ahead of flying anything to space. And as I said, also, you know, really solidifying those partnerships with the other researchers, international researchers, that kind of thing. So we've done multiple research flights with the National Research Council since 2024.
So that's getting you used to it, your body used to it, but also you'll be able to work in that environment then because you'll know what it's all like.
Exactly, exactly. So I mean, the more time you spend in microgravity, the more comfortable and confident and competent you become, because it's really hard to explain what it's like when you unbuckle and
you start floating.
You start floating. The slightest little touch is going to send something in motion.
Mm-hmm.
So if you launch yourself too aggressively out of the seat, you're going to naturally fly across the cabin, you know, potentially hit into somebody else. So every fine movement you do on the flight, you can refine it and you can really get a sense of, as I said, just that slightest touch. So that's where we're up whenever we're operating certain payloads, to get an understanding of what is needed in that microgravity environment is just so fundamental, mm-hmm. so that you can implement it then.
Do you feel sick?
Sometimes you do. For me, it's depended on the flight and what I've eaten beforehand. So generally, I wouldn't feel nauseous, but equally, depending on what I've eaten and the time I've waited between eating and flying,
mm-hmm.
and also how much head movement I've had during the hypergravity phase. So basically, what that means is right now on Earth's beautiful planet, we're under our 1G load, but in these microgravity flights, you pull a 2G load where everything feels twice as heavy. And during that portion of the flight, if you do too much head motion, it can make you nauseous. So
Nora, the next time I'm on the Cú Chulainn on the roller coaster.
Keep your head nice and still.
Right. Okay. That is practical advice though, isn't it? So if you move your head too much during that ascension, you might have problems then when you get to microgravity.
Yeah, and it's, I think for me as well, it's been the transitions of microgravity into hypergravity, microgravity, hypergravity, and that repetitiveness. All of those things can lead to you feeling unwell.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as that, you know, some flights we might do 11 or 12 parabolas. Other flights we've gotten up to 18 parabolas. It can be a very hot day. All of those things will impact how you feel.
And what will you be doing in space?
Yeah, so our flight is a research flight. And as I said, we've been able to use the last 2 years to prep in terms of the science, in terms of the microgravity. We'll be flying a number of different payloads, so experiments on our flights, including wearable sensors. We have a large focus on female health. So if you think about space travel, statistically, women still represent less than 15% of people who've flown to space. So we're very understudied still in space. Equally, we're still very understudied on Earth. So we're going to be three female researchers flying together on the team. Mm-hmm. And we saw a massive opportunity there to contribute to women's health.
So your own bodies will be part of the research here.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have, as I said, been able to use these flights with the National Research Council in Canada to do some preliminary work on the female microbiome. We've just recently published a paper on that with the results. And so you can really use the microgravity flights, not just for the microgravity portion, but the pre and post flight portion as well. So if you're doing medical tests pre and post flight, what do you need? How many personnel do you need? What kind of storage, samples, time, all of those things can be mapped out. So when it gets to actual spaceflight day, you know the full setup, you know what's needed, and you know how long and how many personnel is needed to do all that.
Wow. How do you get from Mayo to space?
A 30-year journey, to be honest.
Where did it start for you? Where did the interest in it begin?
So I have family on both my parents' side in Cleveland, Ohio. So my mom's sister lives in Cleveland. I got to go and stay with her as a teenager, my Auntie Mary, and also my dad's three uncles moved to Cleveland. So I have more relatives on the Patton side in Cleveland than I do in Ireland, which I always think is, it's a nice nod, I think, to the Irish diaspora and the impact, I think, that the kind of travels of Irish people over our heritage has had and had impacted us now, I suppose. So we were on a family holiday when I was in primary school, got to visit the NASA Center and in Cleveland, and that was it. I just completely fell in love.
You were gone.
Yeah.
Hook, line and sinker.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the only one in my family to take the interest in space. So I often think how important it is just to expose kids to loads of different things, music, art, animals, sport, all of these kinds of things, because you never know what is going to be their hook.
What's going to spark the interest. So was there engineering or anything like that in your family at all?
No, my dad worked in insurance. My mom was a swim instructor and, you know, just an all-round grafter, I think.
But I love to hear this because it means that you don't have to have those connections to get to where you have managed to get to.
I think... it's been a lot of hard work. And I think, you know, I often say if I'm doing keynotes or talks or presentations, I say I'm going to show 40 minutes of the best bits. But you know yourself, I don't think anybody gets to a stage in life of achieving a lifelong ambition or goal or dream without a lot of hard work and graft behind the scenes.
Rough days, disappointments.
Absolutely.
All of
things
that.
Not working out. But equally, don't all those things shape us? And I look back and I think they've given me an ability to keep progressing, because I would look back on things that, you know, didn't go to plan or things I'd be disappointed with, whatever it is. It's only normal for not everything in life to work out.
Yeah. And did you ever experience any pushback against a woman, a girl, a female going down this road when you were going through your education in the early years?
I mean, I think back to secondary school. I went to an all-girls secondary school in Ballina, and there probably just wouldn't have been the subject choices.
Yes.
So I think for me, when I did aeronautical engineering, and there were three girls in the course when I started in first year. And I was so behind compared to the boys, because they had come in with technical drawing, applied maths, all the kind of engineering.
So they had
subjects.
The foundation there and you're coming
I
in
was
raw.
So behind. And I just remember I really had to work hard to catch up. And I think it was only in kind of second year on that that graft started to pay off, and I started to really
say, I know what I'm doing now, or I understand this now.
Yeah, yeah. But it's I just remember, and they were like coasting through.
I'd say that first year behind. Was tough. Was it?
It was hard. Yeah, it was. It was hard. But look, I think it's like you know, you often hear people say there is no maths gene. You put in the time. It's an engineering is a lot of maths.
The opportunity has to be there for you as well. You know, if you're not offered the subjects, and if you're not told that this is an option for you, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think equally, would I have been better off going to a different secondary school? Do you know where the subjects were offered? But in any case, I say to people, that was my route, and I managed to pave my path year on year. I graduated one of the top of my class. I loved my undergrad. I loved the studies. It was what I wanted to be doing. So I suppose I was really lucky to have found my niche and what I, because I think of 17-year-old, 18-year-old Nora, and the vast majority of my classmates didn't have that linear thought of what they wanted to do when they finished school.
It's a great help, isn't it? Knowing what you want.
Help.
And it's tough
help.
when you don't know.
Absolutely.
You know, when you see people who don't know what they want, I think it's a lot to expect a 17-year-old to know exactly what they want to do. But if you do know, it's great because you can start forging ahead at a really young age.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what else, what other skills would you say are important for astronauts beyond the science and the maths and the engineering?
I think teamwork for us has been critical. You know, we've been able to really solidify science diplomacy as well over the past 18 months or so. We've met with the Irish ambassador in Canada, in Ottawa, Ambassador Concannon. So he hosted us during some of our microgravity campaigns. And Dr. Shauna Pandya, my colleague, has been in Ireland as well a couple of times since the flight was announced. And we've been able to do school visits, we've been able to do media, we've been able to talk to government to, you know, showcase.
So communications, science communications, not always the easiest.
No, but I think how important it is for people to get an understanding of what we're doing and why it's important, and being able to kind of communicate all of those things. So yeah, absolutely. Communication skills, teamwork, and yeah, just getting the work done.
I mean, we're a small country. How do you see Ireland contributing to space exploration in the future?
Yeah, so I think we have huge opportunities. It's for me, it's when I graduated way back when, there were very little opportunities to stay in Ireland and work in the space sector. But now what we're seeing is a lot of startups, a lot of Irish startups in the space sector. And I'm seeing graduates come out of undergrad and they're staying in Ireland and working in the space sector. So that's a really important circle to have, you know, the whole pipeline, but equally the pipeline of jobs for when people graduate. And so the investment is key. You know, our investment in the European Space Agency, which allows commercial companies and other research organisations to draw down funding from the European Space Agency to work with European Space Agency personnel and really to get a sense of technology development that they can then spill into commercial contracts. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're seeing. You have the ESA Phi Lab, which was recently announced in Ireland to support Irish companies in the manufacturing space, excuse the pun. But I think all of those supports are just so critical to help companies thrive and be part of this massive space economy. It continues to grow year on year. There are opportunities not just on the manufacturing side, but on the data side. So all of these space-based assets, satellites, all of the information they're giving you, data analytics, there's so many ways that Ireland can position itself.
You have a small person now as well.
I do.
Do you have an astronaut, potential astronaut?
Oh, I think it depends on the day.
But you have to see it to be it, right?
Have to see it to be it, yeah. I mean, she thinks it's perfectly normal that mommy is going to space. Sometimes she says, I'm going to go to space with you, mommy. So,
well, you never know. You never know what might happen. Nora, such a pleasure to meet you. Thanks very much for coming in. And I'm delighted to meet you and get to chat to you before the flight happens. And you've been announced as KPMG's new ambassador, which is important to mention as well.
Yes,
that's another
thank
aspect
you.
To all
yeah,
of this.
Absolutely. So I just really want to highlight today our I'm so proud to announce I've come on board with KPMG as an ambassador, and I'm really excited about what we'll achieve over the next little while. So stay tuned for lots of things there.
And come back and see us.
I will.
Coming
thanks
up
a million.
To the flight, that is Nora Patton.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.